The views expressed on the Final Straw Radio do not necessarily reflect those of Asheville FM, WSFM LP Asheville, or Friends of Community Radio.
You're listening to Asheville FM at WSFM LP at 103.3 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough.
And I'm Bursa Goodness.
The Final Straw can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KOWALP in Olympia, Washington, WCRSLP in Columbus, Ohio, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, and Berkeley Liberation Radio. Archives of The Final Straw can be found at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, where you can explore our 5 years of past programming, and you can write to us with questions or comments at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net.
You can also write to us via snail mail at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806. You can also follow us on most of the nasty social media you can think of for show announcements and related topics. This week, we'll be hearing an interview with Del McLean of Atlanta Black Cross and Sandy, who's the mother of an inmate at Georgia State Prison, about the TEER program implemented there. The TEER program is the means by which certain prisons in Georgia are reducing the time outside of cells for prisoners down to mere hours a week from multiple a day, based on minor accusations and infractions, and sometimes with no clear process towards getting out or limit of stay. While inside, these prisoners are kept on a minimal diet with no commissary, often no access to the library for legal research, along with other issues. More on what's going on with TEER at GSP can be found at atlblackcross.org. That's atlblackcross.org. You can read the words of prisoners there, written by the prisoners via their letters posted and transcribed at that site. Following the interview, we'll be hearing songs from the Philly post-punk project King Azuz, the death rock band from Oakland, Bitterfruit, and the Czech atmospheric RABM project Marnos, from a recent comp which translates to Go and See. Would you all care to introduce yourselves for the listening audience?
Yes, my name is Sandy, and I have a son that's incarcerated in George Correctional Facility.
My name is Del McLean, but I go by Earthworm, and I've been a pen pal of several prisoners for the past few years since the 2012 hunger strike.
And we're going to be talking about the Georgia State Prison, GSP, outside of Reidsville, Georgia. Can you all talk about the prison and maybe give some specifics or specs and talk about the conditions there?
Well, Del, I'm happy you.
The hunger strike that's going on in the Reidsville prison is in protest of the TEER program there. Now, the TEER program is Georgia's version of a segregation unit. It's like a high-security kind of prison within a prison, and they put the people on segregation, meaning isolation in some cases. And now I've been told by a prisoner there that the TEER program prisoners are housed in a condemned part of the Georgia State Prison, and the conditions are just really harsh. So I can get into that now, or maybe we want to into the general.
And I understand that program is called a TEER program, and it supposedly goes into three steps, where a person, they get in trouble from not having a haircut, maybe having on the wrong shirt, something minor, they can get from like 30 days, anything from 1 to 30 days for that first offense. And then the second one is a Tier 2 program where they keep getting into trouble and they'll go into a 9-month program. That time they get locked down in solitary confinement for 9 months. And the next step is a Tier 3 program, which is supposed to be for like 2 years. But I have just recently myself spoke with two family members this one particular lady, she lives in Mexico. She's not even a citizen, don't have a green card. She had to get special permission to come over to the United States to even see her son. And she's actually there, here in the United States now, but she has to leave back on the 25th. But she could only see her son 4 times, but they did give her special permission to go the last time. But her son been in lockup for 21 months. And just the other day, this girl went to visit her brother, which she got really upset. And she was kind of, you know, rude to the staff there. And her brother had been in lockup since, well, for 4 years. So I know the TIER program is supposed to be step one, 30 days, then the second one, 90 days, and the next one, 2 years. But there are people that have been locked down and still being locked down from, like, 4 years to 6 years, and so on. So it's not.
And this is a problem that we've been seeing that a lot of the different prisoners have been reporting on, that they're supposed to get reviews for when their time is, when that they hit that 30 days or 90 days, and they're either they're not getting the reviews or they're just being rolled over and kept in that program. And that was actually a complaint in the 2012 hunger strikes as well, that they weren't being given their 30-day reviews for when they were put in segregation. But we're still seeing that. And another aspect of it is that the TIER program is used as punishment, which it's not supposed to be. It's supposed to be for if you're a significant threat to the safe functioning of the prison. But what we're seeing is if they don't like your attitude, or they don't like the racial group you belong to, or they don't like your political beliefs, you can get put in the TIER program for those things, or for speaking out.
Exactly.
So effectively, someone who's incarcerated there is supposed to be able to go through a review after that period of time that they've been in segregation, like you said. And what sort of recourse, if they're not, if it's not being addressed, is there even just not paperwork and they're just getting left in those cells and it's not being addressed by officials because they don't want there to be a paper trail for them continuing to punish people in this manner?
Yes and no. Even it doesn't matter if it's a paper trail, who can you go to? It doesn't matter who you go to and who you talk to, you know, if nothing's going to get done. You know, you can have the paper, you can have the proof, but it's still going to, it's like, okay, we'll do this, and that's it. It goes no further, you know, because the TIER program came from the Department of Correction and Foresight. It was created there, I understand. You know, so they're the one that created it. They're the one that started it. And these people are getting there. Some people say they don't even take showers for weeks at a time. They get their food late. And not to mention it's hot. We know, see how hot it is outside now. You can imagine how hot it is inside of there.
So today saying it's 90 or 100 degrees in the cells.
Yes. So, you know, it's just a really terrible condition, and not to mention, you know, I heard the cells are only, 9 by 12, size 12, that these people have to stay in constantly for 24 hours, which are really supposed to be 23 because I thought policists say they're supposed to have at least five hours a week outside, but a lot of prisons don't have that.
They're not getting it.
They're understaffed. Yeah, they're understaffed, and they don't have the room, so they don't do it.
So people are sitting in those cells 24/7, or some of them maybe get 1 or 2 hours outside a week, but they're not getting the yard time they're supposed to get.
What kind of human access are they getting? Like when they do get out, are they individually shipped off to whatever? Like, all right, now's your time for a shower, maybe a phone call, maybe, you know, time in the rec yard, but no contact with other prisoners because you're in the TIER program? Or are they at least allowed to congregate a little bit during that period of time or interact with each other?
By yelling through their cell doors, you know, yelling across the hall or through the cell doors or whatever, not even to get out and make a phone call. The phones are brought to them. They don't get out to make a phone call. The only thing they get out for is to go and take a shower, and they're handcuffed and shackled to go take a shower. And that's actually supposed to be for their protection, but they don't come out at all.
And the shackling brings up another concern that one prisoner wrote to me, which is the phenomenon of swirling, where either guards or other inmates beat someone who is shackled. And I got a letter from somebody who himself had been swirled.
And that kind of stuff do happen. And there are people that have died back in lockup.
Does that seem like the kind of coordinated effort, like on behalf of the guards, that they would allow other prisoners to do that, to vent out whatever, like, I don't know, competition or whatever they have with each other or whatever clique they happen to be in?
This guy that I talked to said In his case, it was just the guards were afraid to intervene and they didn't feel like breaking it up. But there, I've also talked to people who were beaten by guards. And in that case, yes, it's a very coordinated thing, and the cover-up of it is coordinated as well.
So the communications that have been shared from prisoners on the Atlanta Black Cross website describe a number of physical, mental, emotional, dietary, and spiritual deprivations and degradations faced by inmates held in the TEER program. Can y'all talk about those? Some of those conditions based on the views of folks on the inside?
Well, sure. I mean, they're just getting denied everything. Actually, they're just they're deprived of everything because they're just put in a cell and they're just locked away there. Now, the ones that's fortunate enough to have some family members that can come to Little Time 2 hours twice a week to see them, they will get out and come up. But everybody else is just going to sit back there in the cell. You know, and they're not allowed, all their privileges are taken away. They're not allowed to participate in anything. And I think that's as far as going to church, you know, or doing anything. So they're deprived of everything.
Reading materials, pictures. They're not allowed to have pictures on tier two of the program. If you send them a letter that has an article or something with a picture in it, they'll send it back to you rejected. One of the main complaints that I've been hearing from prisoners is that they're not allowed to flush their own toilets. So if you're sitting in a two-man cell, you're sitting there with the waste in the toilet until a guard comes by and flushes it from outside of the cell. And the guards are supposed to come by at a routine time, but sometimes they're understaffed and they don't make it by, or just out of spite, they refuse to flush the toilet. So that's just sitting there in the cell with them for hours and hours.
In the letter that was titled Tear Memoir, it referenced the argument that that exact thing was totally did not work at all in terms of the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution. Can you talk about what that argument is? And outside of human rights concerns, like actual legal concerns that people are bringing up in terms of the kind of stuff that GSP is pulling?
Well, the Eighth Amendment bans cruel and unusual punishments. So it seems pretty clear that a lot of the things that are happening to these guys are cruel. And maybe the prison officials say, well, it's not a punishment per se, but that's just a quibble. Obviously, what they're doing should not be allowed in terms of the beatings, in terms of underfeeding them. They're supposed to get a regulation 2,800 calories a day, but the meal trays don't come anywhere near that. And malnourishment among the TEER prisoners is widespread. And the violence from the guards is just above and beyond the cruel and unusual concept. In fact, today I just got a letter from a prisoner who was raped by several guards, and now there's a cover-up trying to prevent him from getting the grievances filed. There's a Prison Rape Elimination Act that exists that requires that an independent investigator come 100% of the time when somebody's raped, but he hasn't been able to get in touch with that independent investigator. And he's requested the video footage that exists of each of these incidents and has been denied that. He's been denied medical care. I mean, these things, you couldn't do this to prisoners of war under the Geneva Convention, let alone to prisoners under the Eighth Amendment.
There was also mentioned some of the, I'm sorry to jump around, there's just so much that was in the letters that are on the website, like so many different effed up things. I would imagine they don't have access to programs, right? No programming. Do they have access to reading materials or any sort of like mental exercise things? Do they have access to religious reading materials, I'm wondering also?
Well, they have, they can exercise in the room, like, you know, do whatever calisthenics they want to do. And as far as I know, you can send reading material. You can send books and reading material, anything that they want to read that's allowed, you know, there. A lot of things are allowed there for them to read and stuff. But there are a lot of prisoners that's in there that don't have anybody on the outside to send them anything. So, you know, and those people, those are most of the ones that's locked up. You know, a lot of them that may be in trouble because they don't have anybody out here to do anything for them.
Isn't it right that Tier 2 prisoners are not allowed access to the library? Or am I mistaken about that?
Well, I don't think any of the tier, not just Tier 2, but Tier 1, 2, or 3 is have access because all their privileges are taken away. They're already, even to come to visitation, they're already shackled. The arms, the waist, and the feet are already shackled. They're not going to, and they're understaffed to even bring them out to visitation and stuff. So they're not going to send them to the library. All their privileges are taken away. Matter of fact, I mean, it's hard to get to the library even when you're not in the tier program, so I heard. So I don't think that Tier 2 get to go to the library, and neither do Tier 1. I haven't heard of anybody yet so far that been in there, been to the library, any tier program. They don't come out their cell, only to take a shower. That's it, 24/7. You know, I mean, it's just like an animal just caged in and not allowed out. And it's cruel.
Is this program just being implemented at GSP, or are there other facilities in Georgia that are doing this?
The website says that GEAR program is located at Hanek, Hayes, Macon, Smith, Telfair, Valdosta, and Ware State Prisons. But obviously it's also at Georgia State Prison, so that might be out of date.
So all the, it seems like it's at all the maximum security prisons. But I know it's at all the max. Matter of fact, I think Hayes is like 90% lockdown. But they just started this about 2 years ago, not even quite 2 years ago.
So I just talked to some folks in Durham at the county jail in North Carolina, where they've been doing this thing called the lockback, which is kind of similar, it sounds like, to what y'all are going through, but obviously different because it's a county as opposed to state, and it's a different state. But one of the things that they were referencing in terms of decreased quality and amount of food that was being provided was the relationship between that institution and Aramark Services, which was providing health and mental health and food services for the county jail system, decreasing, like, for the sake of increased profit, decreasing the calories that prisoners are getting, going down from 3 hot meals a day to 2 sandwiches, and hoping that way to, like, press the inmates into purchasing food from the commissary that they would make money off of. What sort of is there that same sort of maltreatment of prisoners at GSP in relation to privatized services being provided, or is that not an issue there?
Well, in the tier program that I know about, they don't have commissary anyway. So I think the malnutrition that they're suffering is just purely out of spite. The one explanation that I've heard indirectly through a prisoner letter is one prisoner said that he heard an official saying, "Well, we're glad you're losing weight because it'll be easier to beat you in a fight." So I think since the tier program, prisoners have lost the commissary privileges, that doesn't apply.
Can you go into a little bit of detail, either Sandy or Dell, about what that decreased rationing of food looks like and the quality of it?
The letters that I've gotten have said that the trays are half portion every day, and on Saturday and Sunday they only get 2 trays the rest of the days. They're supposed to get 3 trays. And I have heard reports of people being denied trays by the guards just out of spite. And another report that I recently got from a prisoner was that there was a Confederate holiday. I think it was the Independence Day for the Confederacy. And the guards celebrated that Confederate holiday by denying prisoners food trays.
And can you say something about the racial dynamic in the prison in terms of, like, population of inmates and in terms of what the guards look like?
Well, I mean, I just seen them all where I went. I don't think there's too much of a racial issue, not from where I've been looking.
Okay.
But
I couldn't speak to the whole demographic of the prisoners or the guards, but in this letter, the expose about the Klan, this prisoner says that he's seen white COs with swastika, SS tattoos, which is a Nazi symbol, and openly displaying Ku Klux Klan membership via tattoos. So I can't tell you about the overall demographics, but as we all know, the demographics of prisons in the U.S. Throughout the country are just vastly skewed towards over-imprisoning the black population.
Are there any groups organized among the prisoners that are attempting to struggle against the conditions? And if so, how do you understand their goals and their means?
Well, go ahead, Ms. Devil, because I really haven't heard of any groups, but I'm sure there is, Ms. Devil.
One letter that I got from a prisoner was, I found really heartening, the idea of United Nations Against the Machine, UNAM, is a group of formerly just nations. I think you might call them like race-affiliated gangs that are coming together across race lines to fight together against the systematic oppression that they're seeing. I'm not sure about what the specific names of the United Nations are, but you might see, you know, Latino and Black gangs, and different groups coming together, putting aside hostilities in order to fight for their common purpose.
Sandy, is your son participating in the hunger strike?
No, he hasn't mentioned anything to me about a hunger strike.
Okay, just curious. You've mentioned that there was hunger strikes in prisons in Georgia in 2012, and I've heard word that prisoners who have been involved in the current hunger strikes at GSP hold on to the memory of the prior strikes. Can you talk a little bit about those hunger strikes and what this current one looks like, who's on it, and how long they've been on?
Absolutely. Now, I found out about this current strike through Kelvin Stevenson, who was involved in the 2012 hunger strikes and the 2010 hunger strikes, or the 2010 strikes. Now, so I've been writing Kelvin for a few years since the 2012 ones, because he was brutally beaten with a hammer by guards after the 2010 strikes in retaliation for his participation in those. And he subsequently, after filing a complaint, was placed in the strictest tier of the tier program, tier 3. So he was actually sent to a separate segregation prison and spent a lot of time there, finally has been downgraded to tier 2. So really you can see there's continuity between these strikes, because in a lot of ways it looks like the tier program itself and the horrible conditions on it are a response to the vastly successful 2010 strikes in terms of being a reprisal, and they want to keep control so that they can hope to prevent uprising like this happening again and being successful, which I think is why it's so important that we support these guys who are struggling, and despite all of the adversity that they're facing, are daring to speak out, knowing that that could mean that they get put on the tier program or that they spend more time on the tier program. You know, and if they're brave enough to do that, then it's the least that we can do to support them.
Can you name some of those prisoners, or do you feel comfortable naming some of the prisoners that are on hunger strike, or at least giving an estimate of how many are on and what that strike looks like?
Yes. So several people have come forward and explicitly said, use my name, and I won't mention any that have not explicitly said to use their names. Currently, William Vessel is one of the prisoners that is actually on hunger strike right now, and he's one of the main aspects of his hunger strike is that he's being denied the food that he needs. He needs a special diet, but he's being denied that. Kelvin Stevenson was the one who was a part of the 2010 and 2012 hunger strikes. He went off the hunger strike when it got so bad that his health was waning, because he started hunger striking in February and it's now June. So he's been on and off. And I'm not sure what the status of that is right now. There were a list of names of about 5 people that I originally got of people participating in the strikes. However, I'm not sure as of now whether they're still hunger striking. So other than William Vessel, I'm not for sure that anyone is still on hunger strike.
For folks in the audience, the listening audience, who maybe don't understand like the motivations that would drive someone to go on hunger strike and also what it can do to the body, would you either of you care to speak to that? Just kind of describe in gruesome detail.
All right. Well, I think the position that a lot of these guys find themselves in is one of total desperation. I mean, they are facing incredibly harsh conditions, and a hunger strike is really kind of the last straw. You wouldn't do that unless you really couldn't think of any other way to make a change happen, because, as you allude to, it does take an immense toll on the body. And we're not talking about guys who started out really well-fed, because remember, these are people that have been receiving half rations for the entire time they've been on the TEER program. So they're already malnourished. And then when you begin to starve, which is what will eventually happen if you're on hunger strike long enough, your body's going to start to digest your muscle and you can become very ill. If I remember correctly, the human body can go for 3 weeks without food before starting to incur damage. So when we're talking about somebody being on hunger strike from February to April, as Kelvin was, you can see what kind of a sacrifice that means.
So how has the state responded to the hunger strike, and what kind of support have those prisoners gotten from the outside?
It's mainly been a cover-up. I believe the state is trying to deny that the hunger strike took place. I've heard from William Vessel that he's refused a certain number of food trays in a row, and after a certain number, you're supposed to get seen by a medical professional, but the prison officials are trying to pretend like that isn't happening. And that was the case for Kelvin as well. He was never seen by a medical professional despite having refused something like 48 meal trays in a row.
And in terms of how have y'all been seeing or doing support for the folks while being on the outside, can you talk about some of the work of trying to find other family members and clicking in with them and having conversations about it, or demonstrations or the listening project, any of those sorts of things?
Well, me, myself, I do a lot of research, and I try to speak to every family member that's willing to speak with me. Because I before I was personally involved as far as my son going into prison, you know, I had a thought to, just like most people do, you know, oh, they've been in prison, and the first thing you think is, you know, they did it, or what they did, whatever, they're just dangerous and stuff. And until it hit me, it changed my mind, and I've been doing this for 5 years now since my son's been in, and I would have never known that this kind of stuff that goes on, that people are treated like this in prison. You know, people always say, well, you know, they're okay because they're getting 3 hot meals and a cot, you know, and that's far from the truth.
You know, they're getting treated like animals. So I speak to people because a lot of people don't know, you know. Some people don't know where to go to research. They don't know what their rights are, and they respond in the wrong way. It's like I've seen people respond by cursing out the officials. You can't do that, you know. And I try to tell people what you do is you research the policies and you go by policy. They can't deny you. Well, they can't continue to deny you policy. Not if you just go with that. But if you curse someone out, you're not going to get anywhere because we can walk away from the prison. But our loved ones can't. They have to stay there. So I don't do demonstrations or anything like that, but I talk to anybody that's and help anybody that's willing, like the lady from Mexico. You know, I'm trying to help her with her son because she don't even live in this country. She lives in another country, you know, so she can have to get permission to come to the country, then have to get permission to go see her son in the prison, you know. So that's the kind of stuff that I do, you know. Ms. Dell, I don't know what you guys do, but that's what I do. You know, I try to help.
Well, I think that's the absolutely most crucial thing to do is support, you know, support the prisoners and support the family and friends. In fact, I thought of you today when I got this letter from the mother of the man that's been raped by the prison guards because, you know, I'm sure you can relate to it as a mother yourself, but she is absolutely desperate. Her son is being held prisoner in here and literally tortured and trying to get the word out, trying to get justice. You know, and she doesn't know who to turn to. You know, she's reached out to the governor to, you know, who can help her. So I think being able to contact somebody who at least has been through it for the past 5 years and has some valuable insights like what you have, you know, that can be a lifeline for people. And I think that a lot of the listeners can do the same thing just by writing to the prisoners. And if you want to write to the prisoners, you can go to atlblackcross.org and look at the writings by the prisoners, and a lot of them contain their addresses. And, you know, Kelvin said to me in a letter that I just got today, your letter is like a glass of ice water in the desert or something, the words to that effect. It means so much just to have that contact and to hear from the outside. Because like you mentioned, a lot of people don't have somebody sending them news.
Yeah, you know, people, you know, they do have problems in prison. You know what I'm saying? They do have problems with prisoners on other prisoners, you know. You know, prisoners get in fights because another prisoner's tried to. They fight over simple things like honey buns, you know, M&Ms, little things that we take for granted out here because it's the haves and the have-nots inside. You know, my son, I'm going to put money on his books every possible chance, see him every possible chance I get, send him any and everything that's legally for me to send him there in prison. But the truth is, there are people out there that don't have that support. And what they do, they go in, and not all of them, but they steal from another prisoner, you know, and this caused a lot of stuff. So people, you know, I encourage family members, if you have someone out there that's in prison, you know, okay, maybe they made a mistake, maybe they didn't, but whatever, support them because it won't get better unless you do, you know, because they're locking us up now. They're locking, especially our young black boys, they're locking them up and they're throwing away the keys. There's no rehabilitation at all anymore. They just totally just lock up and that's it. They're not trying to say, well, you know, we're putting this person in here so they can learn a lesson and then they can get out and they can be a respectful member of society again. No, that's not it. You get in and you're worse than when you went in. You know what I'm saying? If you're not a criminal when you go in there and you make just a mistake as a young person, you'll be a criminal within a couple of years, you know, that you're in there because that is what taught. You're taught to act like animals. I have a dog at home that I treat better than I've seen the people there treated. You know, so I encourage family members to just stick with their family member and support them and send them something and, you know, and maybe they won't, you know, have to get in some of the troubles that they're getting into because they're, you know, some some guards and officials in prison, they'd have been working in the prison system so long, and everybody come by and everybody say the same thing. I'm not like this prisoner. I'm trying to go home. I just want to do my time. But they'd heard it so much that it's just like, it's unbelievable. They said everybody's the same. Every prisoner the same, you know, so they're treating everybody the same, you know. And, you know, I just think it's just horrible, you know, because there are people that may deserve to be in there and may be deserve to stay in there. And there are people that have made mistakes and want to come home and do better, you know. So I just encourage them to, you know, and even if you don't have anybody in there, you know what I'm saying? I think just get involved, because it may not be you today, but it can be you tomorrow.
And there's all Absolutely. Sorts of like pen pal projects and community groups, sometimes oriented with churches, sometimes not oriented with churches. And they have lists of folks that are on the inside that want folks to write them and contact and be communicative. Like, it seems like someone's going to be a lot less likely to be recidivistic and, like, get caught up in something if they've got some ties on the outside that they can rely on. But for anyone who's writing to a prisoner and hasn't written to a prisoner before, and especially if they're writing to someone that they don't personally know or have a relationship with, do y'all have any suggestions in, like, safe ways to conduct yourself with that? Because you don't know who the other person is.
You got to do research, and you got to make sure that this person that you're writing to, you know what I'm saying, is want to be on the right track, want to do the right thing, because just like there are people that want to do the right thing, want to do their time, come home, or try to make things better for them, there are also those people in there that just praying, you know, that just want to manipulate and might want 20 people to write them. You know, since the 5 years that I've been in, the first year that my son was in, I wanted to help everybody. I was like, my God, this is happening. Oh, this poor little young boy. And this, I just want to help everybody. Oh, they can't do this. You know, their grandmother is old, so the grandmother don't know what to do, this and that. But, you know, it became like a revolving door. And at one point, you just got to say, wait a minute, you know what I'm saying? I want to help you, but I got to make sure that you're helping yourself. And this is, you know, because I start recognizing some sign of manipulation, and you have to be careful with that. But, you know, I mean, you just have to make sure that you're making the right decision with the right person, because there are people that just want to, you know, be helped. You know, and I say include God in everything that you do. Pray about it before you do anything.
For folks who are starting that interaction and maybe don't know who the person is, are there any, like, good boundaries to set up as you're starting to get to know someone, in terms of, I'm not going to promise to be your romantic partner on the outside. I'm not going to promise to, like, send you a bunch of money all the time because I can't afford to, or, like, things like that. Are there any notes that you could give to folks while they're getting to know that person?
I think those are good boundaries. I think the idea is to have boundaries with anybody the way you would with any other stranger, because this person is a stranger to you. Even though maybe you've exchanged a bunch of letters with someone, it's not the same as knowing them face to face. And, you know, you wouldn't give your social security number to a stranger, so don't give it to a prisoner. And also understand that, you know, even if this is your son or your daughter or your husband or whatever, they may not be the only person to see those letters. Sometimes, you know, the guards obviously read them and peruse the letters as they come in, and sometimes the letters don't get to the prisoner, so you may not know where that letter's going to go. So have boundaries like you would with any other stranger, and similarly, in what you mention, I'm sure a lot of people have heard the term security culture. Don't mention anything that could be illegal or that could get someone in trouble, yourself or anyone else, because, again, understand that those letters are being read by authority figures.
Same goes for the phone calls that you have with folks that are on the inside, too. Those are all have the possibility of being tapped and recorded. In fact, all phone calls can be tapped and recorded. So be safe. Earthworm, did you have anything you wanted to say about, like, in terms of activities in Atlanta or around GSP that have gone on? Have there been any demonstrations or any vigils or anything that have happened recently?
Yes. So in addition to the number one thing I say is support the prisoners and communicate with them, but we've also done a noise demonstration, which is you bring all your drums and pots and pans and noisemakers outside of the jail, and you rattle them and beat them as loud as you can in hopes that the prisoners inside will hear you and know that you're out there and you're thinking of them and you care about them, and that way hopefully not feel forgotten. Now, we did that in Atlanta, but we had a banner in support of the Reidsville resistors so that hopefully the Reidsville folks will know that we're thinking of them as well. Now, we can't send photographs to the people on the TIER program, but hopefully we can send them to the people that aren't on the TIER program, and maybe word will get out in the prison that way that you're not forgotten and you're supported. Another thing that we've been doing is we've got this ATLBlackCross.org website, and we're publishing the writings of the prisoners, so they're able to do their own exposés. So they write to us, and we transcribe the letters and put them up there. And it's everything from, you know, a piece by a guy that was beaten by a guard and lost half his tooth, you know, to exposés of the different mistreatments that they receive, to a list of demands, whatever they want to write. So that's a great resource for people that want to support to go and look and see what's going on in there and find the addresses of the guys that want to get written to. And, you know, we're not used to writing letters anymore. Nobody writes letters anymore. But if you want to, you can email us, and then we'll print it out and mail it to them the next time that we mail them.
Does it make sense for me to ask the question about the Free Alabama stuff? Is there any sort of connection between folks that are inside GSP? Because I know that during the 2010 stuff, there were cell phones that were getting in. It doesn't sound like that's the case right now.
The connection, I think, between the Free Alabama stuff and the 2010 stuff is the work stoppage being the focus. And it looks like, from what little I've read about it, that the Free Alabama project is focusing on for-profit companies using the prison labor, whereas I think in 2010 it was more about the idea of, in Georgia, the prison runs off of prisoner labor. If the prisoners sit down and decide not to labor, the whole prison just shuts down because it's all, you know, they're the ones doing the laundry and the groundskeeping and all of this. So, but the idea of exploiting prisoner labor and not paying fair wages, those are things that you can draw parallels.
Because that response was so good, I'm just going to refrain from asking the question and just go with my, like, should I do this? So y'all have both listed a couple of places where people can find information and ways that they can offer support. Could you go through that again really quickly? Websites, Sandy, if you're involved in any sort of group or if it's just you doing it personally, where you might direct folks, Earthworm, information about the Atlanta Black Cross?
Well, Ms. Dell, you can give me your website because I'm going to start being pretty active in her website. I was doing it personally, just with everyone I come across, so I really don't have a website.
Yeah, absolutely. Great.
Because even though my son got out today, I was still continuing to fight because this is something that have been brought to my attention that I just can't ignore. You know, I wouldn't feel right, even with my son at home, I wouldn't feel right just knowing that there are other people, or of any race, it doesn't matter to me, that's locked up and need help, that really wants to do better.
Absolutely. Well, let's join forces then, and you know, the folks that you've been working with, we can all use this website, ATLBlackCross.org, ATLBlackCross.org. And if you're a prisoner or the family member of a prisoner, you can submit a piece for us to publish as well about your experience. And Sandy, I think, you know, your experience is incredibly valuable for folks on the outside to hear, because not everybody knows, you know, like what you were telling me the other week about what a harrowing process you have to go to try and get the visitation.
Exactly.
you know. And I have personally myself have driven 3 hours just to take someone to a visitation to a prison that I couldn't even go in, that I didn't even have to go, you know. And I'm not saying that everybody have to do that because it is hard out here with some people financially, and I understand that, you know what I'm saying? But whatever you can do, even if it's just to write a letter to encourage someone, send some scriptures, you know, just any little thing is appreciated, you know, because what we have out here, we're taking for granted, you know what I'm saying? Taking for granted that we can walk out this door, go get in our cars, or if you take the bus or the train or whatever you can do, or just turn your TV on, you can do that. But they don't have that, and people say, well, they shouldn't have did what they did, you know. And there are people in prison that didn't do what they is in prison for doing, and there are people that did, and people that just made a mistake. Whatever, we shouldn't judge anybody, you know, but we should, especially for the family member, help. You know, so that's the only thing I'm asking everyone to do.
Del, did you have any closing thoughts?
And even if you get a chance, everyone, just check out the Khalid Browder story, even though it's not in a Georgia prison. It was in a New York prison. I don't know if either one of you heard about the Khalid, K-L-I-E-F, Browder story, where this young man, as a matter of fact, Sunday, he just committed suicide. And because he could not overcome the way he was treated for 3 years inside of Rikers Island, you know, in solitary confinement, being beaten by the guard, being beaten by other inmates, and so on. And even when he wasn't convicted and got out, that still haunted him, you know. And, I mean, it's a really, if you want to, you know, get your mindset on what people are going through, read his story.
Yeah, thanks for pointing that out. That's an incredibly cruel situation that they've been doing pretty good coverage of on Democracy Now!, which I really appreciate from that project. Well, thank you, Sandy and Earthworm, both for taking the time to chat and working out the timing with me, and the great work that you're doing. And Sandy, I hope your son gets out soon.
I said he will. He's on his way home.
Good. That's great. You just heard a conversation we had this week with Del McLean of Atlanta Black Cross and Sandy, who's the mother of an inmate at Georgia State Prison, about the TEER program being implemented there. For more on the GSP struggle and other Georgia State Prison issues, check out atlblackcross.org. Now let's hear the Philly post-punk project King Is Us with the track Elm Street from their 2015 album Tunnels. More can be found on their Bandcamp. After that, we'll hear the Oakland-based death rock queer death rock band Bitter Fruit. We started that with Flowers by Bitter Fruit from their album It Gets Worse. A bunch of sweethearts they are. Right now, we're hearing the Czech metal project Marnos. The song is Mstiva Cantalina, and is from a comp that also can be mispronounced as Didaya Divejse. More on that album can be found at r-a-b-m.blogspot.com, a great source for anti-racist, anti-capitalist, feminist, and other sorts of good stuff in the form of metal, punk, noise, and more.
You're listening to Asheville FM at WSFMLP at 103.3 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough.
And I'm Bursa Goodness.
The Final Straw can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWALP in Olympia, Washington, WCRSLP in Columbus, Ohio, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, and Berkeley Liberation Radio. Archives of The Final Straw can be found at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, where you can explore our 5 years of past programming, and you can write to us with questions or comments at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net.
You can also write to us via snail mail at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806. You can also follow us on most of the nasty social media you can think of for show announcements and related topics. Stay tuned to 103.3 WSFM LP in Asheville to hear Jake's show Onward Through the Fog coming up at the top of the hour. More of our programming at WSFM LP and our calendar can be found at ashevillefm.org.